This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you for the next hour, as always, and you are tuned in live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're listening to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the program, and of course, you're doing that on our HRRN website, which is horseracingradio.net. Really happy to have you along with me for the next hour. This is going to be a fun show. And quite typically, when I get ready to host a Trainer Talk show, I will spend, at least an hour, maybe longer, researching the subject of the conversation. Well, in this case, I can tell you that the more I looked, the less I found. So this is going to be one heck of a conversation. We are going to wing it, and I can't wait to visit with today's guest, who was born, by the way, in Santa Monica, California. He was raised in the City of Angels, Los Angeles. He has saddled 305 winners in a career which is still going strong. Based at Golden Gate Fields in Northern California, he was nominated by one of his owners and HRRN listener Dan Barrett to be part of our Unsung Heroes segment, which airs on our Saturday morning Equine Forum show. Well, when I read through his story a little bit and the information that Dan had sent to me, I said, you know, he's more than worthy of being an unsung hero, but I thought it would be even more appropriate to spend an extended visit with him today on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. If you want another layer to his story, how about this? Legend has it he once turned down a position with Hall of Fame trainer Charlie Whittingham. Yeah, that's right. Please join me in welcoming trainer O.J. Harige to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. O.J., welcome, my friend.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm great. Let's not bury the lead. Who the heck turns down a job to work with Charlie Whittingham?
Well, it wasn't exactly like that. I was working for a guy named Ronnie Rash in L.A. or Santa Anita. And to be honest with you, L.A. has always been more of a pressure place. And my brother was a jockey in the Bay Area. So I figured, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to go to the Bay Area. I didn't really spend a whole lot of time. And when I came over here, I became friends with a lot of people here. And before I left, Charlie asked me if I was interested in taking the second string over there because he had a guy named George Lambert. He was going to retire, and he thought maybe I'd be a good one to take the job. So I said, Charlie, give me at least a month. Let me relax, get away with my brother, take a little break. And I'll come back and, we could talk. So, okay, that'd be fine. And I ended up going to the Bay Area. I really loved it. I met a lot of friends here. And I just really enjoyed it. And then he came up over to run a horse and stake race. And he says, well, you're coming with me. We're going to go and you're going to work for me. And I said, Charlie, to be honest with you, I really love this job here. I mean, I like it here. People are nice. I want to stay. And so I did stay, and that's how all this happened.
Now, talk about betting on yourself, and it's a move that has paid off for you, O.J. Your brother, Luis, he was a pretty good rider. He won, 745 races in his career. He won a graded stake. He could certainly ride a little bit, couldn't he?
Yes, oh, definitely. He could ride. He rode a lot of different places. He rode a lot on the Midwest over there with, Lawnacres. Over there, and he did well. He came up here. He was actually riding for Charlie Whittingham as an apprentice, so he rode quite a few horses for him, and he did very well. But now he's a steward here in California.
I think I've had the pleasure to meet him when I've been out there before, and a really nice guy, and so great to see that he's still involved in thoroughbred racing. That's pretty cool.
Yes, yeah, he really loves it. He loves the track. He loves the people, and it's we grew up into this business, and his my dad was galloping, and he got us all into it. So it's hard to get away from the track. It's very hard.
Yeah, it's a family business for sure. Let's go back to the beginning and tell me about growing up in Santa Monica. Obviously, coming from a racing family, did your family steer you in this direction, OJ, or did they try to get you to maybe do something else outside of racing?
Well, my family always tried to get me away from the track, but it's in the blood. It's definitely in the blood, you know. As a very young age, my dad was a gallop boy, exercise rider, rode for a lot of good trainers in the old days, you know, and me as a very, very young kid, I just wanted to go to the track with them. So if I had to get up in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, and run out of there with my dad, if my dad didn't wake me, I have to stay awake. And it's just been in the bloodline the whole time. So, yeah, they tried to steer me away, but there was no way I was going to leave.
Tell me about your upbringing. Were you around the racetrack all the time, or what was it like?
Oh, yeah. I've been going to Santa Anita at least, I want to say, 2 years old, 3 years old, very, very young, going to the track, like I said, with my dad, and knew a lot of the older people who was in the business, older trainers, jockeys. Grew up all my life. There's a lot of people that they see me grew up all my life. I was there in the weekends. I was there in the summer. I was there every time I had an opportunity. So, yeah, it was always every weekend it was my joy just to go to the track and learn and watch and to be honest with you, just be friends with everybody, especially with the grooms. I had a lot of friends who were grooms over there, and it was always fun, you know. I enjoyed it.
Tell me more about your dad. What was he like to be around at the racetrack?
My dad was a very, very good hand. Anybody who knows my dad in the old days, he was good with tough horses, horses that were particular, had a bad habit or something that was just too tough. My dad was the man. He was the person that you had to get on, and he tried to, you know, fix them and work with them or just to ride them. So, yeah, my dad, he worked for, you know, like guys like Joe Manzi, Buster Millerick, John Coffey, a lot of trainers, you know, but he rode a lot of horses. He was freelance for the same reason what he was, they were tough, so he rode for a lot of people there. And he did, you know, he was a very good hand.
What a great opportunity for you as a child to be able to go to the track and not just be around your dad and learn from him, but be around some of those big names that you just mentioned. That is a wonderful opportunity.
Oh, yeah. You know, my dad was actually pretty good friends with guys like Lafitte Pinquet when he just started coming around, you know. So I knew Lafitte as very, very, you know, coming into the Santa Anita scene or Southern California scene. And, knew him. Obviously, I knew Bill Shoemaker, Donald Pierce, a lot of the big riders, you know. And then you know, Francisco Mena was also a good rider at the time over here. And Alvaro Pineda, he was a very, very good rider who died here in an accident. And I knew them. So, yeah, I knew a lot of people. And then it was, like I said, they were fun, they were family, it was awesome, and just to be around, and, you know, those people, to me, they were just friends and people you see, and that's how I looked at them, you know, all these years.
Yeah, it becomes like a family. You know, the racetrack, the backside, it really does become like a family, and that's one of the great things about the sport of thoroughbred racing. What are some of your fondest memories, OJ, and maybe some of the stories that you like to tell people about when you were a kid and you were hanging out around all those big names? And did you go to picnics and barbecues and things like that with some of the folks that were prominent in thoroughbred racing?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we did a lot of, you know, the thing about the racetrack, you go there in the weekend, you know, being a Latin, I knew a lot of the grooms, all the people. They had picnics at the track. You knew a lot of the jockeys and trainers and some of the owners. But just the people, overall, just the people. It was just so easy, so friendly, and so safe, you know. And all the time, you know, we hanged out over there, and it was just one of those kind of things that I just enjoy myself a lot, you know. And so, yeah, we did a lot of things, especially around the racetrack with everybody, and it was fun.
Who were some of the other trainers that you really looked up to as a kid growing up around the racetrack?
Well, when I was young, you know, I paid attention to me, it was Charlie Whittingham. It was one of the big ones. Just the way he trained, you know, he wasn't a hard trainer, but he was a trainer who liked training horses to go two turns and long, and he had a different way of training. And I always amazed, but Henry Marino was another trainer I always really liked a lot, you know. Know how to train really good horses too. A little different from Charlie Whittingham, but he was definitely an awesome trainer. I got an opportunity to work for him, and I get to learn different things from different people. I also learned, like, from John Sadler, who I work as a groom there. And, you know, most of the time you do all your learning is by watching, you know, and that's one of the things I've done. They don't really tell you how to do it. You just got to pay attention. And I think, you know, over the years, you just got to pay attention to everything, and you would watch, you know. So that's how I learned, and that's how a lot of these people that I really like, you know, watched.
How cool was it to see John Sadler get that win in the Santa Anita Derby a couple weeks ago?
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. He deserves it. He's a very good trainer. He comes from a long way, and it's great to see him win that race. And hopefully, you know, I'll be rooting for him. Hopefully he wins the Derby. So it's nice, very nice.
Did you have a favorite John Sadler horse when you were working with him, or horses maybe, or even a favorite Charlie Whittingham horse that you would follow as a kid?
You know, with John, he had, at that time when I was working for him, he had a lot of claiming horses good. That was a time around Valiant Pete. That would be, you know, a nice horse. He was a sprinter, and he was cool to be around, and always, you know, I got a chance just to see a little bit of him, because I left a little bit before him, but he was just coming around. But, yeah, that was one of my favorites at the time. And then before I showed up, he had Miller, you know, and Miller was a really good filly that he had and did really good. But John had a lot of nice, good horses at the time, allowance horses and stuff like that, and they were just joyful. And with Charlie, you know, he had so many great ones. We could go on and off, but I think, you know, obviously Sunday Silent is one of my favorites that he had that I just loved, and it was just awesome to see that.
So you were not an easygoer fan?
Well, I was an easygoer fan because he's a beautiful horse and a great horse, but obviously it was a Sunday Silent fan.
Hey, come on. You got to defend your player, OJ. It's okay. It's all right to be Sunday Silent. That was such a divided rivalry, wasn't it? It was East Coast or West Coast, and there was nothing in between.
Yes. Yes, and I took a little more personal because I knew Patrick Valenzuela for a lot of years, and having him be on the horse, it was very very sentimental. You know, it was nice. Actually, I have a story on that. I was working in a construction place, you know, with and stuff like that, outside labor, and it was just my high school time. I remember I asked my boss. I said, "Hey, can I take Saturday off?" He says, "Why?" He says, "Well, because I'm gonna a friend of mine who I know, Patrick Valenzuela, is gonna run the Kentucky Derby, and he's one of his first ones. and he has a chance to win it. I'd really like to see it. And he says, no, you need to come to work. And I go, oh, man, I got to go to work. So I went to work, showed up. We had the little radios. It was a hot day. We're outside hearing this thing. I had all my friends around it, and we're hearing this race, and they hear it down the stretch winning with, you know, Patrick Valenzuela. And I started thinking, he wins the Derby, excited as everything. And I'm thinking, what am I doing here? What exactly what I'm doing here? So I went up to my boss, and I said, guess what? I quit. I'm done. He goes, why? Well, you quit. I asked you for the day out to see the Derby and see and let me do it. And I figured, what am I doing here? I should be back at the track. So I did. I went to the track next day, and I went back to work.
Yeah, it's amazing the way that that can draw you back. And that is a great story, O.J. By the way, visiting with O.J. Harrigy here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, based in Northern California, grew up in Southern California, and you can hear he got a chance to hang out with some of the biggest names in the sport of thoroughbred racing on the West Coast and really anywhere. But you're talking about that moment when you said, you know what, look, I tried to do something outside of racing. I got to get back in the sport somewhere. I had the similar type of moment when I was working at Thoroughbred Times. I left Thoroughbred Times and started working as, I'll call it an apprentice for a gentleman who became a very good friend and a mentor that was working with the stock market. And I was trying to learn what that was all about. But it didn't take long before I realized, you know what, I have to get back into racing. That's why I moved to Kentucky. It's what I love. And, one thing led to another. I fell into the radio gig, and the rest is history, as they say. But I had that same type of moment. It seems like so many people, OJ, have that moment when they're outside of the sport, but somehow it pulls you back in. What is it about the game of thoroughbred racing that does it to you?
Well, they always say it's in the blood, but I think it's just being around those beautiful horses. And like I said, as a young age, I had a lot of friends in the track, you know, and sometimes they were just the grooms, the trainers, the riders, everything. It's just, I just knew that was me. Even when I went to high school, I wasn't the smartest kid, and I knew I wasn't really worried. I said, well, the track's going to, I'll be at the track. I don't need to do anything. I don't need to be a doctor. I don't need to be a lawyer. I'm going to do this. And that's just, I always just knew, I think, you know, wanted to do it, and that's what I always wanted to be at.
Yeah, and you talk about jockey.
It was a game changer for me. That's what I do.
Sure, sure. Yeah, sure it is. You talk about jockey Patrick Valenzuela, P-Val, who was as good as they come, 4,372 wins. He earned more than $166 million in purses in what was a stellar career. And he had his fair share of demons. He had to battle through some different things. He kept making comebacks. As somebody who was so close to him and a good friend, you're watching him go through all of that. How tough was it for you to see him go through that, OJ?
It was tough. It was tough, you know. I know a lot of his family members, you know. Fabian, his brother, we talk a lot and stuff. And, you know, you're a guy like him. You all just want him to come back and rebound and just do better and prove it. And I was a big-time Patrick Valenzuela fan and still am. I'm always rooting for him. And, he had his moments, but he was one of the best riders in the world. And he's always been like, he actually was just a good guy, a really good guy when you get to know him. And I always enjoyed talking to him and stuff. But we knew for a lot of years because, you know, my dad used to, like I said, gallop. His dad used to gallop. His dad's name was Albino. And so I see Patrick over the years when he was here. I know he was in New Mexico a lot too. But when he was around here, you know, it's just a really good guy, you know. And his family, like I said, I knew a lot of his family. His brother, Fabian, actually was pretty good friends with him. And it always, when he wasn't riding from his demons, I knew, it hurts, you know, as a friend. But I always wish him well to this day. We always wish him well.
So you leave your construction job when you're in high school. You go back to the racetrack and fall back into the sport again, if you will. What was the the next move? What was the first job that you got after leaving the construction job?
Man, I did everything. You know, I was from the hall walker to the grooms to all that. I went back to the track. I did help out different barns, like I said, hall walking and all that for different people. But then I went back outside to work at a horse hospital for racing, equine, Chino Valley Equine, and a guy named Dr. Robert Baker, who was well known veterinarian. I went there to work for a year, and then about a year, Dr. Baker says, you should go back to the track and go over there. So I said, okay, I'm going to go back to the track and maybe, you know, go work, because my ideal was to become a trainer. That was my ideal. So I just wanted to get all these kind of different experiences so I could learn and try to be more focused and more sharp what I wanted to do. So he set me up with a job with Bill Spahr, which Bill Spahr and my dad used to work together with a gentleman named Joe Manzi in the early ages, and they used to have the offstrings at Hollywood Park. So we, you know, he knew me, who I was, and everything. I went to work there for a couple months, and then one day me and Bill, we really didn't get along that much, you know, so I decided to go elsewhere. And I jumped around a little bit on my jobs, like I said, because being a young, trying to focus, trying to do, you know, learn. So I went like from Henry Reno to John Sadler to Richard Mulhall, and I even worked for Joe Manzi. And I worked with different people. But the beauty of all that, I learned their ways. I learned different things from different people. And they always bring, you know, help you learn from your experience in racing, you know, especially training-wise and stuff. Because, you know, you would see every horse they run. You watch them out. Every horse they train different. And everybody has their own ideas. And you put that in, you know, you learn from that. And so, yeah, that's how I took a lot of my schooling, is from all those people.
There's a chance that there are people listening right now, men and women, who are thinking about following their dream of becoming a horse trainer. What's the number one thing that a young trainer just starting out has to learn, OJ?
Well, first of all, you have to have horse sense. And to get horse sense, you got to work around the horses and love it. It's a very tough job because you work every day. It's no excuses. Learning from people, especially those people who've been around the business for a long time. Don't hesitate to ask questions to them, you know, ask a lot of questions. But more important is look the horse sense, learn, be around them, and love it. Love the job, you know. And it's not an easy job. It looks easy to a lot of people, but it really isn't. You got to be there with them day and night, and you got to spend a lot of time. And if you love it, it doesn't, you know, all those long hours, it's not going to seem tough for you. It's just a beautiful thing to do.
It's a job that is 365 days a year. It's 7 days a week. I mean, we talk about that quite often. You mentioned the long hours. What is a typical day like for O.J. Hargy?
Well, here as a trainer, it's a little different because the track open over here in Golden Gate, we open the track at 6:15. With a lot of bigger racetracks like Santa Anita, they open at 4 in the morning. So we're a little more different. So I get to the track, you know, around 5:30, go to the barn. I'll talk to all the grooms, ask them how the horses ate, how the temperature, make sure everybody's good. And then I start checking the horses' legs, you know. I start going one by one, look at their legs and stuff like that. By that time, I make a quick training chart and give everybody an idea what they're going to do after I check them. And then we start just trying to figure out who's go first, who goes second, who goes third. I got different riders coming in at different times. I train real early. I get a lot of riders come out early. So I go ahead and we try to get out, you know, as many as we can. And then right after done training, I go back to the barn and go back and make sure everybody looks okay walking wise, anything I should know about the horses, and then just sort of do my normal thing with my veterinarians, whatever I have to do, and just talk to the grooms and watch them do up the horses. And by 11:30, when no race day, if they're done, I will go home and go to lunch, and sometimes I will come back in the afternoon, and it depends, you know, what we do. And then if we got racing, I would be there all day, somewhere down the middle there, go get something to eat, come back, get the bridles ready, and start the racing. And we run to our last race. So that's basically what we do, normal.
That's a long day, but well worth it if you love the game and you love the animal. OJ, can you imagine what your life would be like without horses?
I don't know. I had a lot of things in my head I thought I could have. You know, when things were bad, you go, oh, man, I should have done this, I should have done that. But the reality is I could have had even a really good paying job. I think you just want to come back, you know. No, I don't know how my life would be without the racetrack. It's in me.
You say when things were bad, you think about maybe doing something else. And I've had several trainers, even very notable trainers, come on this program, and everybody goes through rough patches when they're not winning races and things aren't going well. And you have to try to believe in yourself and believe in your approach and your philosophy and your program. What's the key, OJ, to being able to do that, to keep the faith when things maybe aren't going as well?
Well, you have to have a dream. I think that dream is one. When Charlie asked me to come, you know, I came over here in the Bay Area, became a lot of friends. Somewhere I was still very immature, you know, very, very immature. So I was a jock's agent. I did agent for about 7 years. Had different riders here, single, didn't have a wife, didn't have kids. So sometimes, you know, I was just mentally not ready to take anything more serious. So it took a while, and obviously when your things are struggling, you're worried about money, you know, how you gonna make it, how you gonna do this, how you gonna do that. And there was time in my life that being away, I didn't have money, I didn't have my family around, because my brother left back to L.A., and I stayed here. But after, you know, when times are difficult, you have to have a focus. And somewhere down the line, I figured, this is what I want to do. I'm going to try to get to that point, and I will, you know, will love it. So, yeah, there was just have to have focus.
Well, you've had focus, and you persevered, and now it's all paying off. And talking with OJ Harrigy here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Going to get to another break. When I come back, we'll continue this visit and talk more about some of the top horses he's had the chance to be around over the years. That's next on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Fasic Tipton is bringing the heat to Miami with the Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale of selected two-year-olds in training. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale will be held on March 31st after the Florida Derby over Gulfstream Park's dirt racetrack. The sale has a history of producing the sport's very best horses, including last year's Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Nadal, as well as top horses Bellafina, Dona Veloce, Yapin, and Share the Ride. You will find no higher concentration of quality in any two-year-old sale in 2021. The Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 31st at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be? Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2021. Take advantage of competitive purse structures with huge bonuses for Ontario breds and a Woodbine backstretch equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track, a 7 furlong turf training track, a 2 furlong sand ring, and a 1/2 mile European jogging path. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all-weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile E.P. Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 17th. Follow us at Woodbine TV on social media and reach out to our team at woodbine.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Quarter mile to go, and give me the loot. Trying to go the distance here. Swings for home, a length and a half on top. Camino del Paraíso on the move. Love and Peace drops back, and here's Camino del Paraíso to put up a fresh challenge to give me the loot, and Camino del Paraíso has hit the front. Camino del Paraíso shakes off, give me the loot back in second. And how cool is this California bred? Camino del Paraíso. Two wins in a row for him, and he runs away. He won by four. Navy Arm Guard got up for second over Give Me the Loot. Then the Black Album, who was fourth. And fifth was Builder. And a nice effort from Camino del Paraíso. Another stakes win for him.
Yeah, very cool California bred there. Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Wednesday program. And really enjoying my visit with trainer O.J. Hargy, who you're going to hear more from in the second half of the program. He, of course, the trainer of Camino del Paraíso, and we'll talk more about that horse momentarily. But do want to remind you that if you missed any portion of this program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, all you have to do is go over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. They're all there for you ever since our very first one years and years ago. They're all there for you at horseracingradio.net. You can listen to them at your leisure. Binge listen to Trainer Talk if you want to, and enjoy them, and let me know your thoughts. You can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Follow us on social media, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and on Instagram. Well, OJ, that call of the Joseph T. Gray Stakes, which is in November of last year at Golden Gate, a big win for Camino del Paraíso, would go on and run in the Seabiscuit Handicap, a grade two at Del Mar in his next start. But this is a horse that won seven races and was so consistent, so cool.
Yes, this horse, you know, I bought him for $5,000 as a yearling. And when I bought him and I put a couple guys together, I was just hoping he could be breaking the main for 12.5, you know. And a horse like him, just what he's done the hard way, always tries. But he had some bad moments too, you know, and he got clipped heels, lost the jock, lost the whip. I had a jump over a shatter, he jumped a little bit there at Santa Anita, lost a $200,000 by a nose. He's a good horse and game. He's very game.
Jumped a shadow and barely lost that race. How tough is that to take?
You know, when that happened, well, I was watching it live, and I thought, oh, my God, what he did? It took a bad step or what? And then I thought Flavian was going to pull him up or something. He looked like he was grabbing a little bit. And then the horse started running again, and I just to see him to get, at least try to win it, where he just barely lost, I was glad he was fine and ran a great race. But after I look at the replay, I go, man, this is a tough beat, really tough beat.
What's the saying in racing, that there are a lot more ways to lose a race than there are to win a race? Is that right?
Oh, definite. I could tell you, there's a lot of stories like that. I think every trainer has their own stories about it. But, yeah, definitely. There's only one way to win, a million ways to lose.
You know, and you can do everything perfectly, and you're still at the mercy of luck and the racing gods in a lot of respects. And you're at the mercy of the jockey, too, trying to make those split-second decisions. And as somebody who has a brother who was a successful jockey, I can imagine that you might even be a little tougher on jockeys in some respects because you know what it takes to be good.
I'll be honest with you, I'm not as tough as jockeys. When something happens, I don't say nothing. And I just like to listen with whatever input they give me. But in the end, you know, if I'm not happy with them, I'll just put another rider next time, you know. But yeah, it's a tough moment. Every time you lose, it's easy to blame the jockey. Most of the time, but it's a tough deal, you know. But You know, you work so hard with these animals, you put a lot of time in it, and you prepare them for that one race, especially when you run from the last race to the next race, whatever if it takes 2, 3 a month or even a couple months. You're trying to prepare them, and sometimes it only takes one split of a second or a bad decision to lose the race, and that's it's hard. It's very hard.
Yeah, bad break. Maybe the horse doesn't care for the conditions of the racetrack. There are, again, so many things that can go wrong. Only one thing that can go right, and that's finding yourself in the finish at the finish line first and in the winner's circle. And Camino del Paraiso, the richest horse that you have ever trained, OJ, but I know that there had to be other horses along the way that have held a special place in your heart for whatever reason. So tell me about a couple of them.
Yeah, I had a filly named Amaranth. Did really good. My owner, Highland Yard, who's been a big, big supporter of me in racing here, once in a while gives me an opportunity to buy really nice horses, and he bought this one at the OBS April, I want to say, and horse, he's won a couple races, good ones, you know. He's won the center, Maddie, you know. Actually, I thought when that race won, I won a grade three. I thought, oh, my first grader race, great, I won it. And then, but they took it off from the turf into the dirt. It was a race before the Breeders' Cup races, and I lost the grader races because they switched the track surface.
Oh,
but,
no.
Yeah, she was very, very special. You know, just a great horse for me to be around and stuff like that. I had another horse named Downtown CT. It was a really cool horse. Playing him for $20,000. Got a chance to win, you know, some allowance races here. Got a chance to win a little stake race in Fresno Fair here. And he was a really nice horse to have around, too. And I had a lot of other horses that just, they were just hard triers, you know. Frisco Fog was one. Always tried really hard, and I did okay with her, and just, you know, got a chance to win allowance, a couple little claimer spots. It was good, and yeah, quite a few little horses like that. They all tried, you know. So one of my favorites.
Yeah, very special horses, and there are always those that capture you. Are you one of those guys, OJ, that has pictures of your horses or win photos and memorabilia all over your office and at your house?
Yes, I do. In my office, I do have had a lot more pictures. I took quite a few down, but I still have some there. My house, I have few up here. You know, I only get to put in certain spots because then my wife doesn't want me to put all over the house, but I do have a definite quite a few pictures in here in my house.
What's your most prized racing possession?
Well, to me, it's just the pictures I have, you know, because those just are the memories. Memories that I got that I could look back, and sometimes, you know, every horse, you know, regardless if it's a maiden aid, $3,200 horse, or a winning stake race, every horse has a meaning. Also, when I started, I had my girls. I see them as babies, and I watch them. And you see how fast your family grows with the business. And so, yeah, my biggest position is definitely the pitchers.
Talk about that part of being a horse trainer, OJ, trying to balance the family life. And you talked earlier about how taxing the hours can be and the commitment you have to make to be successful as a horse trainer. How do you balance work and home life? How do you do it?
Well, you have to in a lot of ways, you know. I mean, there was times when my wife was working at Golden Gate Fields, so there was times that she couldn't pick up the kids from school. And I know if I had, let's say, 2-3 hours before to go pick them up, I would go all the way home from the track home, which is 35 minutes away one way. I would go home, pick them up, and bring them with me to the track, or when they were a little older, I could leave them at the house, or sometimes I would just make sure they're okay. I would go to the daycare, you know. So, yeah, I had to balance it between me and my wife all the time, but I think we did a pretty good job. We did it. Now my girls are, my youngest is 12 and my oldest is 18. So they're a little more independent now, and they don't, I can let them do their thing. But yeah, it's, you have to work with it, and it was challenging sometimes, and but I would do it, definitely.
Did the girls ever express interest in being a horse trainer or following in Dad's footsteps in any way?
No, not really. I mean, both of them love the horses. Let's start with that. They love it. They love the horses a lot. But I always try to get them to pay attention to school and learn and all that, you know. But they love it. They watch the races. I know when I'm at the track and or my wife's so home with the girls, they watch, you know, TVG or the internet and watch the races, you know, and they enjoy it watching. But their biggest treat right now is just to come to the barn, you know. And right now with COVID, you know, you don't get opportunity to go to the barn because there's a lot of restrictions right now. So they really miss that. They really do. So hopefully that's one thing we could do soon for my family, because we'll spend a day just hanging around the barn, pet, give carrots, just to be around the barn, you know. So hopefully. But interest to work with, not yet, let's put it that way.
Would you want them to?
My oldest, I don't think she would be interested. The little one, I think she could definitely be interested, but she's very smart, and I'm hoping she could go ahead and do something else, you know. But my oldest is more independent. She's got her own ideas, and I think she has an idea what she wants to be, which I don't know yet, but I know she has an idea what she wants to do in her life.
They say behind every good man is a great woman, and that certainly sounds like the case with your situation and your wife. How did that come about? Was that a racetrack romance?
No, it wasn't. I do have a great wife. I can't beat that.
How'd you meet her?
It's a weird deal. I was a jocks agent at Fresno, California. I had Castanon, I had Tony Castanon, I had a guy named Jose Arriaga at the time, was a good little rider here, and I ran at the small, we have a little fair called Fresno Fair here, which is big in the California circuit over here, and I made good little money. So my rider, my go-to main rider was Castanon, and he said, hey, I'm taking a month off, because he lives in L.A., he said, so let's take a break. I said, okay. So I'm figuring, you know, I'm going to go to Mexico. I'm going to go hang out with my relatives and just go over there, just enjoy, have vacation. So I went over there and went to Mexico. I got there on Halloween day, actually. I went there to my aunt's house. And so my aunt asked me, hey, you got a girlfriend or what? Are you planning to get married or what's the deal? And I said, got no girlfriend. I come here just to go out with different people, go see you guys. I have no idea. And I'm not even looking for it. And then I see my cousin showed up with this gal walking into the house. And when I seen who she was walking with, this beautiful girl, and I told my aunt, see that girl right there? That's going to be my wife. And she looked at me weird, and she goes, oh, yeah? That's going to be your wife? He goes, yeah, that's going to be my wife. Well, here, let me at least introduce you to her, so, you know, if that's going to be your wife. So she did. And that's how it started.
Wow, fantastic story. O.J. Harrigy, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. What does O.J. stand for?
A very hard name, Osvaldo Harrigy.
Osvaldo.
Yes, I won. Actually, won my first race. I want to say it was 1990, and it was under that name. And I won my first race at Del Mar, and I only trained for a few months, and I realized, oh, I can't train with his name. There's no way I could ever do this again. So I made it easy. O.J. Haruhi.
Is that a family name, Osvaldo?
Yeah, you know, a lot of Latin people, a lot of Mexican people, they have Osvaldo, Oswaldo, Osvaldo, different ways. But, yeah, they use that more common than you think. It's common.
You know, we started in the first half of the program talking about the different jobs that you've had and being around the racetrack with your dad and with your brother from a very, very young age. This was in your blood, O.J. You talked about working at an equine veterinary clinic and then spent time as a jocks agent and being around other trainers trying to learn from them. You really have done it all, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, because, you know, it's like everything. You enjoy this, enjoy the racetrack, and you figure, well, I could do this, I could do that, I could do this. And I've done it all, you know. So, yeah, I don't want to say I did it all, but at least I did a lot of stuff. Yes, I have.
Yeah, I met some wonderful people. Charlie Whittingham, Bill Spar, worked with John Sadler for a time. We talked about that in the first half of the program as well. And we'll encourage people, if they missed any portion of the show, to go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to listen to the entire program, because it's been a delight to hear your story. But there's another individual that we need to talk about who had a big impact on you. You were very close friends. He left us a few years ago. But Armando LaHaye, another person that you were very close with.
Yes, Armando. So when I met my wife, and then when I was really getting serious, my mother-in-law, my future mother-in-law, said, "Hey, you can't marry my daughter if you have a good job." So okay, I better get a good job. So I asked Armando. I said, "Hey, Armando, I want to get married with this girl, and I need to get a job." He says, "Well, I need an assistant. So if you're interested," I go, "Yes." He goes, "Yeah, I'm interested." He goes, "Okay. When do you start?" I said, "Well, here, there's two things I need." "What's that?" "I need you to loan me $1,000 because I'm going to go to Mexico, go tell my mother-in-law I'm going to have a good job now, for now." He says, "And after that, I come to work." I said, "Give me about, let's say, a week." He goes, "Okay." Give me $1,000. Went to Mexico, told my wife I'm going to get a good, solid job. Came back, started working for Armando, and then I got married. And Armando, I was working for Armando for about 4 years, who really, really helped me a lot, personally, in a lot of ways. And I learned a lot from him. A very good trainer.
Yeah, a very good trainer, and from all accounts, an even better person. He passed away at the age of 59 back in 2017, died of a heart attack. I can imagine when you got that phone call, that was a difficult moment, O.J.
Yep, it was very difficult. You know, I know Armando was a little bit sick, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, when you're friends with them and you've been around, his friends are everyday friends at the track. See how you were doing. By that time, I was already on my own. But, you know, you always go by and see him. He's always a person I ask for advice. "Hey, Armando, if I want to do this, do that, what do you think? I got this horse. You know, he's got this problem, but I want to run him. What do you think? Well, can I work him? What do you think?" Always ask the question. And that's one of the things that I missed about him. And to this day, I still miss him, because I'm always looking for somebody to talk about advice. I think that's just one of the most important things, you know, to go to somebody, even when you still don't know, especially in this game, nobody knows everything. I had that one person, and now that you don't have them, yeah, it meant a lot. It meant a lot to the Northern California people, actually in California, and it meant a lot for me, yes.
You still find yourself, even to this day, with all the winners you saddled, the experience that you've gained now, you still find yourself coming across things that you don't have answers to, OJ?
Of course. I'll be a fool to say I know everything because I don't. And I'm learning, still learning to this day. There's one thing what Charlie Winningham always told me. Keep your eyes open, your ears open, and never say you know everything, because nobody knows everything. And keep your mind open. And to this day, yes, I do. And I believe me, if something I don't know, sometimes the grooms would teach you things, little things that you could learn off of them about this business. So, yeah, I'm always keeping my eyes and ears open to learn. That's one of the things about this game. It's you never stop learning.
You know, I'm so glad you brought up your grooms because, you know, so often the grooms are not in the spotlight, but they are such an integral part of the success of every trainer. And I've had more trainers than I can tell you come on this program over the years and tell me that their team is the reason that they are so successful. So talk a little bit more about your team, OJ.
Oh, yeah. I have a pretty good team. One of my main grooms is Santiago Lomas. He's an older gentleman. He's been around with me for a long, long time. Almost practically when I started training the second time, it was probably about 06. I started 05, but 06 came working with me. He's my main guy. He knows what's going on. And if he tells me, hey, horses are fine, they're fine. If he comes up a little problem, because sometimes you see a horse's legs look great, they go to the track, come back, he says, hey, you better look at this. And he tells me, hey, pay attention, watch, look at this little problem. And he's always been my major success. Santiago Lomas. And then I have a gal named Lourdes Garcia, Lulu as I call her. She works really hard, very good with horses. Every horse loves her. Actually, I've been winning races with her lately. And she's just takes her time, just works around the animals. And you don't have to worry. They all love her. It's just something about these animals. They just love her, and they eat good. Even horses I had real nervous, that maybe other grooms weren't comfortable, or I hear this horse is nervous, and I give it to her. These horses are just, like, real relaxed. You know, they're easy. And she's always been work hard. And then I got another guy named Carlos. He's been working with me for about a year, and he works good. He tries. He puts his time, good groom. He's been around the racetrack for a long time.
Yeah, it's important to have that good team behind you, and O.J. Haragi certainly has that. He is my special guest here on Trainer Talk. We're down to about the final 5 minutes, coming to the final 16th of a mile here on today's show, O.J. So I'll ask you a couple more questions. Number one, I'm curious about the decision to be based in Northern California. How did that come about?
Well, I was here. I was working for Armando, and working here, I just figured, you know, this is where I should be at. And I just started training, you know, and I started with two horses. And next minute, a few months later, I had quite a few horses. I got up to at least 40 at one time, and just loved it here. And to this day, I love the Bay Area. This is like the place I want to be at. I know I'm not going to turn rich here, and I probably won't get that big-time horse, you know, just horses that my client could give me here. But I love it here in the Bay Area.
Well, you never know. That big-time horse can come from anywhere, and it could certainly come from Golden Gate Field and from your barn as well. The way I like to wrap up these shows, OJ, is by asking trainers to let me know something about them that we haven't talked about yet, maybe something a little more personal, like another hobby or interest you might have outside of horse racing. I know you have your girls. I know you have your wife. So when you're not at the racetrack, what are some of the other things that you enjoy doing?
Besides the horses and family, I like to cook. I like coming here at the house. You know, just being around my family is probably the most important, because I don't have family around here. Everybody's in L.A. So I spend a lot of time with my family, And we do things with the girls, like, you know, go to the movies or stuff like that. But basically, you know, I like to cook. I'm not a golfer. I can't say I golf. I can't say I do any other stuff. But cook and being with the family, that would be my main hobby.
What's your favorite dish to make?
Well, my family likes when I make barbecue ribs or carne asada, you know, steak, flank steak on the grill. I like to barbecue a lot, especially we get nice weather over here. So even like a stress day, you know, we come out here and get a few little steaks just in the barbecue. My wife will bring out a little bit of wine. We'll just sit on this beautiful patio out here and just sort of relax and cook and talk how our day is or just let us, you know, stress-free, you know, relax. And so that's one of my favorite things.
How far are you from the Napa wine country? Because that might be what brings me to Northern California next.
Oh, Napa's beautiful. Well, it's closer to Golden Gate. From Golden Gate to Napa, it's about 45 minutes. So my house is probably another 30 minutes. So I'd say like an hour, 15 minutes. Definitely. I made a lot of runs down there. And very expensive, especially when I take my wife with me, because she buys all these bottles from everywhere. And I would tell my wife, hey, I only got a few hundred dollars. Next minute I'm spending $700 of wine. But that's the beauty of being close to Napa. You enjoy good food, all the wines, and it's just beautiful. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I can't wait to get out there. Really looking forward to it. I'll make sure I touch base when I do. I'll let you take me over to Joseph Phelps, and we can spend a little time over there.
Got it. Sounds good.
Maybe some Silver Oak, too. Well, we're in Napa. You have
Silver
to stop
Oak
by there,
nice.
Too.
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. OJ, listen, I appreciate the visit. It has been a delight. I need to thank Dan Barrett for putting us in touch and making this show possible. Really glad we got to spend some time, and all the best moving forward, and hope to meet you in person soon, my friend.
Same here. Thank you very much for the interview. Thank you to everybody. Thank you.
Enjoy it. OJ Haragi here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Man, what a visit. Super nice guy, and somebody who has worked his tail off from the time he was a child to follow his dreams and become a horse trainer, and he's living that dream right now, and a great family guy. Wonderful to hear his story. If you missed any portion, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. Follow us on social media, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.